Today's episode of Beyond the Mask is presented by the team at CRNA Financial Planning. Get a free consultation today to be guided through the complexities of investing and financial planning. Just visit crnafinancialplanning.com. Beyond the Mask is also sponsored by crnaeducation.com. CRNAs, you can get the CE credits you need by just going to crnaeducation.com. They have over 100 AANA prior approved credits, all four core CPC modules, and even over 40 pharmacology credits. No subscriptions, it's all online and mobile friendly. Just go to crnaeducation.com. And don't forget, listening to our podcast can earn you Class B credits. For more information on how you can submit them, check out our CE credit tab on our website, beyondthemaskpodcast.com. Welcome to Beyond the Mask, innovation and opportunities for CRNAs and advanced practice nurses, with certified financial planner Jeremy Stanley and CRNA Sharon Pierce. Jeremy Stanley has worked with CRNAs for more than 23 years, and Sharon Pierce is a former president of the AANA and the NCANA. Join us as we leave the operating room and learn the latest in the CRNA and advanced practice nurse industries. Beyond the Mask starts in 10, 9, 8, 7.
Sharon, back in Seattle here again.
Oh, and the weather is just spectacular.
It's amazing. It actually would have been wonderful out there.
I know. And my hair's not frizzy. No, they don't have the humidity.
That's true.
You haven't even said it. Yours is standing up a little bit.
Mine always stands up, you know? So it's the dew in my hair.
Is it stiff? Let me feel. Oh, my God. That could cut you.
You got to have it stiff to make it stand up.
We're not going there.
Oh, sorry. I didn't even know what I was saying. Sorry.
Okay, let's go.
So let's get going with this podcast here. So we have a guest with us today. You want to introduce her?
I do. This is, and now it's Yurden. Yurden. I had seen your name before. Amy Yurden. And Amy is here with us from Alabama.
All right. And she's a grit.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We did another podcast this morning about grit. Mm-hmm. And she was from Ohio, so she didn't know what grit stood for. And we had to educate
girls
her a little
raised
bit.
In the South.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a grit.
Yes,
and
you are.
And I love grits.
Yes.
I do
put
too.
Butter in yours or sugar?
Butter and salt.
Butter and salt.
Oh, yeah.
No salt for me, but I do butter.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You know what I really like to do is scramble my eggs and put my eggs in my grits.
Oh, yeah.
That's so good.
And a little sausage.
Little sausage.
Yes.
Oh, you guys are making me hungry now.
I know, right? And we haven't even had any breakfast yet. So I picked Amy out because of her topic that she's presenting on here at the annual Congress this year. And so she said when she got my email, she thought it was a phishing email.
You know, you can be a little dangerous. Sure.
Oh, well. I always catch my fish. And Sandy Marie really catches her fish.
Oh, absolutely. So, literally.
Anyway. All right. So, Amy, welcome to the show. And so, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and introduce the topic that you're here to talk about today?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And I really did think it was a fishing attempt. I thought there's no way they'd really be interested in me. But I'm Amy Yurden. I'm a CRNA from Athens, Alabama is where I live. I've been practicing since 2011, and right now I'm a full-time faculty at the University of Alabama in Birmingham Nurse Anesthesia Program. I'm the assistant program director.
Who's the director there now?
Susan McMullen.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think I knew Susan.
Yeah. So I've been there a little over 2 years, but I still practice clinically every week at Huntsville Hospital, which is a level one trauma center in North Alabama.
Oh, Lord. Gun and knife club meet pretty regularly down
there. Yeah, they do sometimes, especially in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Uh-huh. So tell us about your topic, the reason why you're here to talk with us today.
Well, honestly, it's something that I became interested in back around 2016, 2017. I was practicing as a CRNA, and at that time I was the education coordinator for my hospital for the Department of CRNAs. So I was always looking for things to educate our group on. And it's a large hospital, a large amount of CRNAs that work. And so naturally we had some diversion happen, and it becomes, you know, this big topic of conversation after that happens. Everyone's a little devastated, but then you start hearing all these little, well, I did notice this about someone, and I did notice this, but right. no one had talked about it together, so we didn't have the whole picture. Right. And it made me think about when I was a nurse in the emergency room before I went to anesthesia school. I had a close friend who was diverting as a nurse, and I could see it happening, but kept myself away from it purposefully because of the stigma that I had around the topic, and didn't do anything, didn't report. She did not get help, and then she eventually overdosed. She survived that overdose, but once I started, you know, looking more into this topic in 2016, 2017, that time, it became apparent that I was uneducated when this first happened to me as a nurse. I didn't realize the severity of it. I didn't know how to recognize completely the signs and symptoms and what to do. So I thought, this just happened in our department. We need the education. So that's when I really started looking into it. And then Tanya Carter, CRNA in Texas, did her she did her dissertation on the barriers to reentry to practice for nurse anesthetists. And the big barrier that she found was the stigma and how hard that is, you know, from your coworkers, your colleagues. It's hard to come back into practice. It's hard anyways. You're jumping right back into the fire, right?
Right.
But when you don't have support from your colleagues, that makes it even harder. And that's when it clicked for me. That's why I didn't help my friend get help, was because of the stigma that I had. And I had not looked at it that way before. So it just kind of hit me harder. So that's when I really started looking into this and thought, I think if we address that in ourselves and acknowledge it and try to flip the way that we look at it and really understand that this is a disease, it's not necessarily a choice. These people are not less than because of what they're going through, and they need help. They need support. So if we can really acknowledge, if we have that stigma, we can remove ourselves as part of the problem to getting them help or to their reentry to practice.
Yeah. Well, we've done shows on this topic before, but I think the more that we can talk about it, the different angles that we can come at it, the more people will feel comfortable to get help if and when they need it. And you've said a couple of times you had a stigma around this. What were your perceptions about people with, you know, alcohol abuse or substance use disorder?
Yeah, so both of my mother and my father had alcoholics in their parents. And so they had kind of challenging childhoods because of that. And that obviously affected their attitudes about alcohol and drugs. So I took that on growing up. We were very, grew up in a very conservative religious household, which was great. I still have not tried illegal drugs to this day. I didn't have my first sip of alcohol until I was 20 because I took on people that abuse substances and alcohol are bad. It causes trouble. It will destroy families. So my parents, I think, were both very fearful, knowing that there's that genetic link that they would potentially have the problem too. So there's never any alcohol in our house. So I just really took that. I'm a rule follower, you know, and so I just took that to the extreme and really always separated myself from people that did drugs and alcohol. So I didn't realize how much I had that attitude about it until I had the friend who started diverting and felt myself like totally separating, pushing her away because of that. I didn't want to be associated with it.
But I do think that we separate out substance abuse disorder, opioids, but alcohol is another thing.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're here at the annual Congress, and you go to any bar around here, and it is slam full of CRNAs.
Yeah.
How do I know? Because I'm right there.
Exactly.
But I think we do separate it out. But anyway, I digress.
No, I agree. How did these negative perceptions really affect you and when you were dealing with your friend? You kind of mentioned a little bit, you know, you didn't perceive it, but you did in some ways.
I did, but I didn't, yeah.
So yeah.
I was, I finished nursing school and began working in an emergency room as an RN at 20 years old. So
could push morphine, but not buy alcohol.
Exactly.
Same for me, man.
Yeah. And there was no education in nursing school on how to identify people who were impaired or diverting or any. I didn't get any of that education.
Well, you used to have surgeons who would come in and you could smell
alcohol
on them. Yeah,
really?
Back in those days.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Back when they had coffee and cigarettes in the
yeah, yeah. And I mean, they would they were on call 24/7, especially yeah. in a small community, so it was not unusual.
Yeah,
but again, I'm so sorry.
It's all right. Well, so as a new graduate, I started working in the emergency room with five other new graduates. So it was tough for that department to have so many new grads working in a busy emergency room. And so we all, those six of us, really got tight, very, very mm-hmm. close knit. We tried to help each other because, you know, ER nurses are tough, right? They're young. Yeah. And we wanted to excel. So we got close and tried to help each other out. And about a year into working, we noticed, I noticed, none of us talked about it. I noticed that one of the girls in our group, she was going through a divorce, having trouble with her children because of the divorce. They were like preteens, so tough age anyhow. And I noticed that she lost some weight. She just was starting to look more and more disheveled. She would call out a lot when she was there. She was just kind of not at her best for sure. And started to just lots of things that were sticking out in my brain, like, this is not right. And she was partying a lot, going out, and I started to suspect that maybe she's diverting and using drugs. And some of the people that she hung out with, you know, we saw. So feeling like that's what was going on, I totally, like, kind of cut her out and pushed away. Because if she is diverting drugs, number one, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that as a nurse. Right. I never received any education. I don't want to be associated with it. And, you know, I've got this and this thing that I grew up with, thinking that these people are bad. Yeah. Yeah, my stigma around it. So I just separated myself rather than do anything about it. And this was a couple months to see the steady decline. And then one night, I don't remember if she wasn't working or wasn't, if she had called in, I don't remember, but she wasn't there. And we got a phone call from her her boyfriend, who was a paramedic, said he had found her overdosed. So he brought her into our ER. So we had to work on her.
Oh.
And that, like, actually doing that, I was starting her IV and looked and see her getting intubated. That's when it finally clicked, like, oh my goodness. And I looked around the room and everyone in there, we're all friends. We all have the same look on our face, like guilt, shame. We all knew it. And I didn't know that until I see everyone's face. They all knew it. We all watched it happening and nobody did anything. And now here she is. So what if we had said something? Could we have prevented this moment? So, but I still, even like educating myself on this topic, still didn't really get how much my stigma affected that until I started reading Tonya Carter's work and I spoke to her to prepare for this. And then there's another study that just came out last year that looks at the stigma on this as well. So that's when it's really, I thought, I can't be the only one, right? Surely I'm not the only one that has this this opinion that I didn't even realize affected me so much. It's that whole implicit bias. You don't realize how much it affects you. So I thought if we talk about it, it's a tough story. It's something that I'm very ashamed of. But if we don't learn from our mistakes, you know, we don't learn anything from it. We can't make it better.
Hey, CRNAs, it's time to simplify your continuing education. Welcome to CRNAEducation.com, your trusted provider for CPC core modules and a plethora of Class A CE credits. You can explore 43 detailed articles covering various anesthesia topics, all from your favorite device, anytime, anywhere. And with over 40 pharmacology CE credits, meet your state board requirements effortlessly. Whether you need a few credits or everything to recertify, we have what you need. Just complete your credits online without any subscriptions or recurring charges. You can trust in our 100% CRNA-owned platform, established in 2011, ensuring you receive the best in customer service and educational content. Ready to learn? Go to CRNAEducation.com. Making continuing education easy and accessible. And don't forget that support is always a quick email or a text or phone call away. To sign up and learn more, just go to crnaeducation.com.
It has to be hard, though. You know, and I've never been in this situation. But it has to be hard to see a colleague, a friend, who you think might be struggling, but are they? And if you say something, are they going to get mad at me? Are they going to get upset? Mm-hmm. Am I going to get them in trouble? I mean, all these emotions that go around with that, it has to be a difficult situation. And in your case, you know, you had an upbringing that taught you these people are bad, and if if I go around with them, I might get pulled down as well.
Right.
So you had a different layer there. But there's all these things that go around, like you say, stigmas, which, you know, I don't know how I would have handled that.
Well, let's go down that path. You know, what would you have done differently now that you have educated yourself on substance abuse disorder? And I'm sure one of the goals of educating yourself is saying, okay, what do I do next time if I see this? So what are some things that our listeners need to know that they need to do if they see the same kinds of things that you saw in a colleague?
Right. I think that, you know, the AANA has a wonderful slogan, and I always like to stress that when I try to do education on this. If you see something, do something. So that means if you notice something that just sends that little alarm off in the back of your head that, that's not right. I'm not sure what it is, but it's something. Tell your supervisor. And a lot of places do have I can't think of what it's called.
Hotline?
Well, not a hotline, but if you tell, like, a no, you don't get in trouble if you're wrong.
Right, a whistleblower kind of thing. But AANA does have a hotline.
Right, absolutely. So call the hotline. And then every state has the their state peer advisor that can help as well. But basically, you just give someone the information. And that's what I tell our department at Huntsville is over 100 CRNAs. And we all cover different facilities. So if I'm around the same CRNAs most of the time, and I don't see some of this group of CRNAs sometimes, then I might miss out on some of those things. So if we all tell our supervisor what we noticed, the supervisor gets the big picture rather than all I noticed was they lost weight. And all you noticed was, you know, they were disheveled. And all you noticed was they were messing up with their wasting medications or had multiple discrepancies. If the supervisor hears all of the small pieces, they get the big picture and they can help get this person some help. So, but yeah, call the hotline is always the...
Well, and back to what Jeremy was alluding to, you don't want to get them in trouble. You don't want to do this and for those reasons. And we all get that. And, of course, that went through your mind, too. But have you heard Rico Garcia speak before?
I have, but not in depth on this topic.
Oh, well, you know, and he was the one. And he and his wife have done a lecture together, and it is profound if you ever get the opportunity to see them speak together. But he was abusing substances. But he told us, you know, you're saving their life if you report them. Yes, they may be mad at you. Yes, they may hate you for a while. But you've got to know that this will end badly.
Right.
And you are saving somebody's life,
right?
Yeah, by doing this, and that's a hard pill to swallow. Not a hard pill to swallow. That was
literally,
bad.
Yeah.
That was bad. Not the Should first time last, I said that. Yeah, yeah. Armed and dangerous.
Armed and dangerous.
Yeah. Yes, that's a whole other story.
Oh, I heard it. I heard it, and I laughed out loud.
So have you worked with a CRNA? I mean, you talked about working, and you were working as a nurse in the ER. Have you worked with a CRNA with a substance abuse disorder?
Yeah, I have. We've had a couple over my career that have ultimately diverted, or at least there was a big question, things that couldn't be added up. But no other, that's the only overdose that I knew personally. We do have a CRNA, an excellent CRNA, in recovery. And I learned a lot from this individual as well. Mm-hmm. They were willing to talk to me when I was doing the education for our department back in 2016, 2017, and told me a lot about the personal experience with what it's like trying to return to practice. Mm-hmm. And I changed some of my practice based on what they told me as far as how they diverted, how they physically did it. So it changed how I prepared drugs and things like that.
Oh, well, tell us.
It was usually they would, back at that time, we were drawing up 5 cc's of fentanyl for every case. I think now in our practice, I don't know what it's like everywhere, but most people are using less narcotics now. But at that time, it was 5 cc's of fentanyl for every case that you would at least draw up. So they would take some out of a prepared
syringe.
Right, and then return some saline or LR or whatever to dilute it back down. Or even, like, take a needle and puncture it through the cap on the vial and then draw it out, replace it with something dilute, and then somehow they were able to like flip the puncture cap back to where it looked like it had not been tampered with.
Wow.
And so, you know, I learned a lot about how the things in the environment become triggers. So it's like it causes the anticipation that you're about to partake in the drug. Those trigger the anticipation of the drug, and you get some of that release and euphoria just from about to partake.
Right. So like whenever you see a dessert,
exactly,
your mouth starts.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So my question was, then how in the world do you return to practice successfully if you are constantly around your triggers? And the response that they gave me was, triggers truly are triggers, and it was about 3 years for them before that it got to where the salivation stopped,
right,
the craving stopped.
The Pavlovian
exactly,
reflex.
And I use that example in my lecture on this, and I depict that on the screen about how you can use that example, that experiment, in this. But it changed that I stopped drawing up narcotics at all until the patient was in the room. When I was no longer going to be separated from the medicine, so I could guarantee this is what I drew up. Or sometimes I don't even draw it up until I'm about to push it.
Right.
Because I typically delay narcotics anyhow in my practice. And I teach my students that when I work clinically is, you can do what you want, but just consider this. Consider who has access to your anesthesia cart, who can get in to whatever drugs that you've prepared. And how long are you away from those drugs, even though they're secure? We all have either keys or ways to get into that cart.
Right, right.
Plus the anesthesiologist, plus the anesthesia techs, plus our circulating nurses.
On me.
We're not allowed to at our hospital.
Well, we're probably not supposed to.
I told you I'm a rule follower.
Yeah. Because you walk all over the place, right? Because I'm carrying my drugs over to the outpatient area. So, yeah. But you bring up a good point. But I also believe that if you're seeking, you are going to find a way to
I believe that as well, but I also think that it's our duty, our professional duty, to protect our colleagues from themselves wherever we can, so we should not be making it easier. I agree
with
you.
So are we part of the problem?
I believe we are. Believe we are, that with our stigma, we're part of the problem, making it harder for it to be reported, so harder for them to get help, harder for them to reenter practice. But then if we are not controlling our medications appropriately, we're cutting corners, we're, doing the easiest thing, we're part of the problem there too.
Today's show is brought to you by the folks at CRNA Financial Planning, an independent consulting firm that offers financial planning services exclusively to CRNAs and their families. From planning for a child's future college expenses to building a predictable income stream in retirement, the firm is committed to offering you comprehensive financial services customized to fit your unique needs and objectives. If you have questions about your financial future, get them answered. Call the team at 855-304-3748. That's 855-304-3748. Or go online to crnafinancialplanning.com.
So what is the hardest part for you of telling the story?
Embarrassment and shame, honestly, because I was an adult. I mean, granted, a very
young. You were 20 years old. Your brain wasn't fully formed.
Right, but I was married. And
that doesn't mean anything.
Well, I'm still married to him.
Well, that's good.
That's good.
But yeah, I was just because of what it's taken me so long to realize what I put at risk by not speaking up. And I was raised to speak up, mm-hmm. So that's the other piece of this. Like, my parents always taught me, if you know something is not right, we should speak up.
So have you forgiven yourself?
I don't think so, honestly. I got to a point where it was like, okay, it's enough time has passed. I'm not so hard on myself. But then I had my daughter. So we had our little girl late in life. We were married 17 years before we had her. And when you become a parent, it changes your perspective on so many things. So many. And I had no idea. So once I had her and I started looking into this again, it made me think about it. Like, my friend, the nurse, had kids. She had a license. I had information. I could have gotten her help so that, that part of her life wasn't affected. And that just hits you different when you're a parent and realize what she had at risk, what she had at stake.
Yeah.
And which it's, I'm not saying it was all my responsibility. We all, everyone that worked with her, we all had a part to play in that. But if we all do a little part, then we can hopefully get them some help.
I'm going to play a little devil's advocate with you, though, Amy, okay. Because the way I see this, and you said it several times, you're a rule follower. Mm-hmm. But you didn't know the rules.
Right.
You didn't know what the rules were. Mm-hmm. You didn't know anything about this. Now, if this were to happen today and you know all about this and all the resources out there, then I could see the guilt side of it and everything. But you didn't know the rules. You didn't know what to do. You didn't know because nobody is really talking about it.
Yeah.
So I think you got to give yourself a little grace with that as well.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You are right. Yeah. So and I agree. Like now we do, I think as anesthetists, we are more aware. I think a lot of programs, nurse anesthesia programs, do try to focus on educating students before they get into the profession about the risks that we are. We're more at risk to do this because of our work production pressures and the stress of the right. job and the responsibility, plus our access
yeah.
to it. So I think we're better educated now. But yeah, as a nurse, I did not feel like I knew anything.
Well, about the AANA has made it a goal since Jean Stewart. Mm-hmm. One of our past presidents who overdosed, and it was her family's request, and they made an endowment to the AANA, and that was their request. They wanted people to have education, and if somebody would have spoken up about Jan, maybe she would still be here.
Right.
Now, Jan was the first president to put me on committee. Did you know that, dear?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. So I knew Jan.
Yeah.
But I think the AANA has done a fantastic job, and actually the ASA has patterned a lot of their stuff after ours because we were ahead of the curve in that regard based on. So, you know, something good came out of something bad.
The resources that the AANA provides are amazing.
Yes.
And, you know, I use a lot of those links, put them in my lecture so that people have access to that. But it's, you can just Google it and find a ton of different resources. It's wonderful.
This is Jackie Rolls, President of the International Federation of Nurse Anesthetists. I'm inviting you to attend the 15th World Congress for Nurse Anesthetists, May 7th through 9th, 2026 in Brisbane, Australia. I promise you that you will love meeting nurse anesthetists from around the world, attending the multitude of Congress sessions, and exploring the many unique experiences that Brisbane has to offer. Hold a koala bear, feed kangaroos directly from your hand, climb Story Bridge, one of the only three climbing bridges in the world, or travel to snorkel the Great Barrier Reef. This is one Congress you do not want to miss. Cheers!
So what do you hope to accomplish with your lecture on the topic here at Annual Congress?
I really am hoping that, so I don't consider myself an expert per se in this, but I do think that I have realized that I have a unique perspective on it. So what I hope to accomplish is for people to listen and acknowledge, do they have any personal stigma or implicit bias around this topic that might prevent them from doing something if they've not experienced it yet? And I think that the education on our risk factors, our vulnerabilities as CRNAs, and then what we could do to help each other by staying educated. And if you look at it from the physiologic differences in addicted brains versus non-addicted mm-hmm. brains. That was another piece of the picture that helped me understand this is, should not be thinking of them in such a negative light because their brains are different. So I think including that in the education is helpful for people to acknowledge if they do have negative associations or connotations with the topic and address those and just leave better educated.
Well, I will say this. Data tells, stories sell. Because at the end of the day, because this is personal to you mm-hmm. and you have a story wrapped around it, people will remember that. Now, you can throw all the statistics up on a slide that you want to, but if you wrap a personal story around it, people will remember that. Mm-hmm. So I think what you will accomplish here with your story will go much further than you ever thought that it would because it is personal. I'll tell you, my daughter's had diabetes since she was five, and so I have always spoken on diabetes and anesthesia care. Well, my daughter's 36, but people still think she's five because, but they know. I will still run into people who've heard me speak over the last 30 years. They'll go, how's your daughter doing? And I know what an A1C is now because, you know, back they didn't know what A1Cs were 30 years ago, really. And but they remember because I told the story about my daughter.
Yeah.
So you're telling the story about your friend, and people will remember that.
Yeah, I hope so.
It's good stuff. Well, as we conclude here, Amy, anything you want to get across to our listeners or put them in the right direction here?
Yeah, I think that I just want to make sure that everybody does just take a step back and really explore how you feel about this topic personally, which is hard to do, I think.
It is hard.
Yeah, whatever biases we have about whatever topic, it's hard to really like look that square on and address it. So I challenge people to do that. Really think about how you feel about this. Educate yourself better on the statistics are helpful, and you know, understanding the physiologic differences of the addicted brain. So if they understand that piece of it, I think that helps allow some of the compassion and empathy to come back through so that we can better support our colleagues. And I think I want people to remember how hard this is. I don't know that personally, but I've seen it so many times. We have all known, I feel like most CRNAs have known someone, or at least known of someone, who this has affected. So understanding that they're dealing with something, some sort of big stressor is probably what pushed them over the edge into this. It was, you know, the way that they coped with it. And if we can remember that part of it, and they're human, and they made a mistake, and now it's just gotten out of control and they need some help. And so if we are always on guard to look out for each other, watch for these signs and symptoms of, you know, different behaviors and signs of diversion and impairment, and say something to someone. And if you don't know what else to do, look at, you know, call the hotline or use the resources that the ANA provides for us. So we just all keep our eyes open and look out for each other. I think that's what is the big take home.
I bet you'll be shocked, and I always have been. There are a lot of CRNAs who are adult children of alcoholics, and that's why they become overachievers. Be interesting to have people in your audience raise their hands on Tuesday. How many in here are adult children of alcoholics? They'll probably knock your socks off.
Yeah.
Amy, thank you so much for this. I think, again, the more we can talk about this, the better off the community is. Mm-hmm. So thank you for doing this. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Again, I'm very, very honored. But I appreciate you making this easier to talk about, because it's not easy.
No, it really isn't. No, it's really not. It's really not. Yeah. Well, Sharon, I think it's a wrap.
I think so.
You want to close us today?
No.
Why not?
Because you are the man. Be a man. I want to let you have some testosterone
Okay. We want to thank our listeners for listening to Beyond the Mask with Jeremy Stanley and
Sharon Pierce.
Sharon, if they like our show, want to help us grow, how can they do that?
Well, the best way to help us grow is to leave us a review, but make it
positive. We know there's way too much negativity in this world.
That's right. Tell all your friends, share us on social media. We grow by word of mouth.
Yep. We're number one in the CRNA community, top 50 medical podcasts in the country. On our way to number one there, too.
There you go.
Until next time.
That's a wrap.
Attention all certified nurse anesthetists. Are you in need of a reliable and quality continuing education option? Well, look no further than CRNAeducation.com. We are an NBCRNA-recognized provider, offering all four core CPC modules to meet your certification requirements. You can choose from more than 100 AANA prior-approved Class A CE credits, with 43 articles covering a wide range of anesthesia topics. Need pharmacology CE credits? Well, we've got you covered there as well, with over 40 pharmacology CE credits available. All credits are completed online and are mobile friendly. Choose articles worth 1, 2, or 3 credits. There's no subscriptions, no hidden fees, just the CE credits you need when you need them. Owned by CRNAs since 2011, you can trust in our commitment to your education. And customer service is always a quick email or phone call or even text away. To sign up and find out more about our education options, visit crnaeducation.com, your partner in continuing education. That's crnaeducation.com. Beyond the Mask is made possible by the team at CRNA Financial Planning. With almost two decades of experience, the firm guides CRNAs through the complexities of investing and financial planning. Schedule a free consultation today by calling 855-304-3748 or go online to crnafinancialplanning.com.
Hi, this is Jackie Rolls, president of the International Federation of Nurse Anesthetists and president and founder of Our Hearts, Your Hands, a global anesthesia support community that takes donations to allow nurse anesthetists in low and middle income countries to go to educational programs, buy equipment, or textbooks. Your donations are tax deductible, and we would appreciate your support.
Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere you like to listen to shows. Also, be sure to check out beyondthemaskpodcast.com. Each episode is posted there with a corresponding blog post, and we timestamp important parts of the episode to help you quickly get to the content you're looking for. Also, check out the special series section on the site. You can follow along and catch up on the CRNA History Series, episodes specifically about political conversations in the industry, or try the CRNA Personal Finance Series. It's all on beyondthemaskpodcast.com. And if you have a question for the show or want to be a guest or even suggest a particular topic, fill out the contact form on the site or send an email directly to us at info@beyondthemaskpodcast.com. And lastly, let's take the conversation social. Check out our Beyond the Mask podcast Facebook page and Facebook group.